Welcome to the Forging Honor podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at the Forge, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing challenges, building habits and character through action.
Today, our conversation deals with questions of self-discipline and self-glorification, what it takes to be an ultra-marathoner, looks at scripture for encouragement for the athlete, and gives practical advice to young men establishing athletic habits. It's challenge check-in time. As a reminder, challenges last for 6 weeks. That's 42 days. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. And our current challenge is exercise for at least 15 minutes every day. Banjo, how you doing?
I did very well this week. Well, maybe not very well. I did well this week. I was able to get seven or eight, maybe nine. Since we've switched off, I haven't been on the Discord as often as I was when we were doing the 2 week challenges, which means that I'm not tracking my habits quite as neatly. Working much more off of memory than I used to, but if memory serves correctly, I'm up to 8 this week. So 8 out of 10, not counting weekends. And it's been very good. I'm really on this end of things. I'm really enjoying the working out. It's still tough. It's still, it's not every day I'm like, oh great, I get to go for a run. Or I get to, you know, do calisthenics or anything like that. But, I started doing the prison deck workout, which is one of my favorites. Do you know this one?
I'm not familiar with that one.
This is what I call it. This is how I learned it. I don't know if it's really a prison deck, but basically what you do is you take a deck of cards, and you assign a workout to each suit. And then whatever number you do, that's how many reps of that exercise you have to do.
I think I actually have heard of that one. I forgot about that. Actually, I know there's a company that makes a deck of cards.
Oh,
specifically
really?
For that purpose. So the cards, like they're playing cards, but they have printed on them exercises.
What the exercises are.
Oh, instead of you having to remember.
Yeah. Well, I really like it. And having an ordinary bicycle deck allows me to switch whatever I'm doing that day, which is pretty convenient. So that's been really good. And definitely feeling all of the improvements that we talked about. Like mentally, I feel a little bit better. Physically, I feel a lot better. And it's just, I feel like I have more endurance. And even, you know, we were talking about squats with Kyle. So I have been trying to add more of those into the mix. And yesterday on my run, going up hills, I was like, this is a lot easier than it normally is. I think these squats are starting to help. So yeah, positive week for me. How about for you, JJ? How was this challenge?
In the last week, I've done 3 days. Instead of my full, I guess that would be 6 days. I'm not doing Sundays again. So that's 50% in the last week. I will say they've been the most consistent 50% I think I've had in a long time. So I've been doing the goal when I started out with this. I was like, all right, every day exercise, right? That's the challenge, minimum 15 minutes. So for the first couple of weeks, I was in the gym Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then I would do a run or a short calisthenic exercise, something along those lines on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. The Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday has pretty much fallen out of that routine, unfortunately. But Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and this goes to the point what we're going to be talking about today a little bit, of I have a gym buddy and he's going to be at the gym Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 4:30. So I know where I'm going to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 4:30. And so that's been really good for me. And I'll say, these exercises, they're longer than 15 minutes. They're usually about 30 to 45 minutes. So I'm over the course of the week, I'm getting that full time in, not to make excuses. But just to kind of, I'll be interested to see the results of that at the end of this, when we do our final challenge wrap up in 2 weeks from now. So,
yeah. One of the things I've been thinking about with these challenges is, you know, you and I are no longer in the days of college where it's like every day you got to go out and get your workout. Saturday, you got to get your workout like this. This consistent thing that you're pushing for. But it's just good for us, I feel like, to have these days where it's like, even if it's not every day, just to have a couple of days where it's like, okay, I'm going to go make sure I exercise today. I'm going to go be responsible with my body today. I think that's just a good habit to get into.
Yep. I'm excited to talk about it. Let's jump into our conversation.
Well, before we jump into our conversation, we want to shout out a dear friend of the podcast, Micaiah Allison, who just this, you know, this Monday before this episode goes out, ran his first Boston Marathon in a time of 3:15. We're so proud of you, Micaiah. We're just all choked up over here.
Happy for you, but I'm not choked up.
We're very excited
really happy for you, Micaiah.
It's an awesome accomplishment. So we thought it would be appropriate to shout out Micaiah and his accomplishment, running the Boston. Way to go, man, on this episode where we're going to talk about marathon running.
Yep. Congratulations, Micaiah. It's a really, really impressive accomplishment that I'm not sure I'll ever achieve. So that's pretty awesome.
Our guest today, David Walker, was a late bloomer in terms of fitness. It wasn't until he was shipped to boot camp that he really was forced to focus on fitness as a serious part of daily life. Physical fitness became a matter of life and death while serving overseas during the Iraq War. After being discharged from the military service and spending several years in rehab for deployment-related injuries, Dave fell in love with trail running and specifically ultra running. Trail running and working out has become a normal part of life, and he serves the running community by directing trail races in Pennsylvania as a full-time job. He is an elder at Redeemer Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Danville, where he lives with his wife and three kids. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
We're very excited for you to be here. For the listener, as we have guests on, every other guest is... Or we each pick a guest to bring on, right? So one is mine and then one is Banjo's. And this is Banjo's guest. So Banjo, you know David personally, which...
Yeah. And I should say, in terms of my own physical fitness journey, you know, we're talking about, you know, health and wellness this week. And we're talking about kind of physical challenges. I should say that that Dave has played a pivotal role in my own fitness experience. Moving me from the humble cross country runner that I was, and pushing me into the world of ultra marathon racing. I came to Dave last year and I said, "Hey, I'd like to try running a marathon. Which one do you think I should do?" And he said, "Whoa, you should try this one." And he didn't tell me it was 7,000 feet of elevation gain. You know, he said, "Yeah, you'll be fine. You'll go out. You'll be fine." And you know what? I was. And in fact, I just recently signed up for his next race, the World's End Fall Classic, which is being run in September. Dave has had a big influence on me. He's also an elder at my church and has just been a great, great person to talk to and to learn from. Dave, how did you get into, maybe just to start, where did you get into ultra running and why has that been something that you're so passionate about?
Yeah, unlike you, I was not a runner or cross country of any sort in high school. I was actually my sport of choice. I was a bowler. I'm not sure you can call that a sport.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was a bowler. I was a varsity or junior varsity captain.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not
great
really
wrists though.
It's funny. I was out last night and I saw like there was the professional bowling something or other was on, and yeah, the kid that won. Not sure you would look at him and call him an athlete though in that, in that scenario. Yeah. But yes, fun.
I definitely was not in my wheelhouse back then, but when I joined the military, they of course have their standards you have to meet. And that's where I had to learn to be more active than I was when I was from high school. And that is when I learned that I was actually good at running in the military. And so good that for my duty station or for basic training, I was the guidon bearer. It's the person who holds the flag in front of the company. And what we'd do, we'd do 20-mile ruck marches. And the last few miles, they would send the guidon bear running with a head start. And the object was not to be caught by the rest of the company before we made it back to headquarters. And I never got caught. And they'd always challenge me. They always give me a little less leeway to get out ahead. And so, yeah, that was my intro to physical fitness in general on a more normal basis. But when I got out of the military, I did not want to run. It was a being forced to run, and physical fitness was fine. And when I got out, I decided I don't think this is really for me. But I also suffered through some PTSD from my year-long deployment in Iraq. And the story goes, my brother had asked if I would do a relay at the Laurel Highlands Trail Ultra Marathon. And I said, sure, I can run a half marathon in this relay. Well, it turns out everyone kind of ditched me. And for whatever reason, God said, you should do the whole thing. And I said, I should do the whole thing. And so my intro was going from a 5K, and 6 months later, I did 80 miles in one go.
That is an insane ramp up.
That is wild. It is not something I recommend people do.
So you're supposed to do 13 miles, and yep. Then you said, "Hold on, hold my beer. I'm going to do the full 80." Yeah. How long did it take you to do the full 80? Is that an overnight type thing?
No, it took me, if I remember correctly, and actually it was a detour that year, and I actually just made a wrong turn and just put more miles than I needed. So it should have been 77 miles, but I ended up doing just a little over 80. And so, I can't say no to some extra bonus miles.
Right.
I think it took me, if I remember correctly, it was just under 20 hours. Yeah, it was my
good
first go.
Night. Oh my goodness.
I did that race five times in a row. The next year it was the normal route. The bridge over the turnpike was fixed at that point. And I could never break 16 hours. So every year I'd be 1601, 1605, 16.
So not only did you go out, run this crazy race, and then say, oh, we'll do these extra miles. But the next year you went back and did it again.
Yep,
and then again. And then again. Oh, good yep. grief.
And can you put in perspective for anyone who's listening who may not be familiar, when we talk about ultra marathons, like, 80 miles is enough of a thing where most people aren't going to do it. But talk about some of the other things that go into an ultra marathon. You're not running these on a track. What's the terrain like that you're getting into here?
Yeah, there are some road ultra marathons, but I would say a majority of ultra running is done on trails, and depending on where it's at. So if you go to Florida, of course, it's pretty flat. There's not much of a hill to be found in Florida, but in Pennsylvania, we don't like switchbacks, and we just like to go straight up and down the ridges through all the rivers and creeks and anything else that gets in your way. So I've done this one race called the Eastern States 100. It's 103 miles, and it has about 22,000 feet of climbing. Yeah. And so there's a lot of elevation. It's rocky terrain. It's kind of nuts. And, after I did the first one, I was pretty wrecked, as you probably can imagine. That ramp up was intense. And my wife looked at me afterwards. I think the next day she came to me and said, "Hey, what do you think we should do for next time? How do you think we can improve?" And I said, "Wait a minute, there is no next time. That was insane.
This was your wife's idea."
But she had crewed. So in ultra running, there's things where you have crews and pacers, especially if they're overnight. For safety reasons, someone will run a certain distance with you to keep you safe. And then you have crews that kind of meet you along the way. They have your change of clothing or shoes or food and stuff like that. And so she was super supportive of me doing this. And she saw me the whole way from start to finish, the whole progression and how wrecked I was afterwards. And she sat there and said, yeah, so next time. And I said, there is no next time. I don't know. No, that was just dumb. And she goes, next time. I said, don't talk to me again about this. Well, 2 weeks later, I said, so next time. I said, how did you know?
That's incredible.
So I ended up, you know, it seems to be how I fell into it was just very, it wasn't planned. It just kind of fell on my lap and I just kind of did it. But what I learned, and she recognized right away through my PTSD, when I came back from Iraq, back then there was no out processing. And I was a combat demolition engineer. I worked with explosives and I was in an incident that really kind of wrecked me. And I had rehab for about 5 years after I got out, but the out processing wasn't helpful. They just said, we don't want you. And I just left. And so I had a lot of issues leaving, and that race, that finding ultra running for me was a serious change in my life. It was, it gave me a lot of different things I didn't realize I needed and got me back to the person I was before I was in the military. So.
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, some of those things, you know, I think probably a lot of people listening to this are not going to run an ultra marathon. And yet there are, you know, there's things that maybe you didn't realize that you needed going into the ultra marathon experience, that you ended up coming out of it going, you know, going into that second marathon, that second ultra, what were some of those things that you're like, okay, I get to work on this now. I get to build up on this now. I need this element of ultra running. And as you grew in that sport, how did that grow you?
Yeah. One of the things from being a race director and putting on races for people, I like to joke with people. They say, hey, what do you do? I said, people pay me and I torture them. And they kind of look at me. I'm like, well, I put on these ultra marathons through the woods and, you know, and they're like, what? And so then I have to explain to them what I do. And they're like, that's nuts. I said, I know it's nuts. But what I have found to be a common thread with a lot of people who do ultra running was the thing that I had found, but just in a different way. When I was in the military and being deployed, nothing was known. Nothing was obvious. Every day I could go to sleep and not wake up because we were hit with mortars, or, you know, I could go on a mission and not come back. And one of the most difficult things for me was when I was deployed was taking someone to a plane in a casket and sending them home. And so there was a lot of coming back. There was a lot of everything was just mundane and just stale, I guess would be a good word. And I figured out that society in as a whole, we tend to go towards what is the most comfortable, what is the easiest, what is the things that I can gain that doesn't cost me anything. And I found just my own personal process and putting on these ultramarathons that people actually miss having that aspect of their life where they're actually working for something and it's not just handed to them and the unknown is in front of them. Because you run 103 miles, there's a lot of time and a lot of things that go wrong in 103 miles. And so it's the constant adjusting and thinking and pushing through pain. When your stomach goes south and you just can't eat food, how do you manage that? How do you manage thunderstorms, hails, there's floods, there's all kinds of things that happen that is unknown to you. And you have to work through it. And it's difficult and uncomfortable. And I have found that most people, they get into this warp because it's missing in their life, where we're in a society that's just very, let's make it as easy as possible. You know, I have internet everywhere I go. I can just pull my phone out. I don't have to think about how to get somewhere. I just put in the GPS. Where is my food coming from? Doesn't matter. I can stop at the convenience store. I have electricity. I have this. I have AC. It's all very, very like just handed to us. And that's what we expect today. When you think about the rest of the world, it isn't like that. Most of the world is looking for just having water, running water, homes that have some kind of insulation where they're not freezing at night. Where is their meal coming from? Well, they're going to have to go out and slaughter the lamb and, you know, do the harvest, and it's not at a convenience store. So there's just those kind of aspects that I have found, especially in ultra running, that I've gained and a lot of people are looking for.
So it sounds like there's a transition from kind of a common, ordinary, comfortable mundaneness in day-to-day living into this like visceral awe that happens in ultra marathon running. Is that maybe a fair way to say it?
Yeah. And I think it also translates to people who go to the gym and they take seriously that they're doing exercises, they're lifting, whatever it is that they're challenging them. So if they're a rower or they like CrossFit or anything like that, I have found a lot of people, they do tend to, or they don't, maybe not know that's what they're looking for, but they tend to, they see the value of striving for something that isn't easy, and it helps them grow as a person. And so, yeah, I don't think it's just for ultra running. I think it's in general. I'm just most familiar with ultra running.
Yeah. Do you think we can use that idea of, or maybe the better question is, how do we use that idea, and how do we apply it to ourselves to motivate ourselves moving forward? And here I'm thinking less about like, you know, I have, I don't know about you, but I have less of an issue going, oh yeah, I'm going to run that crazy half marathon, or I'll sign up for that marathon. The part that really gets me is like training for it, like going out and, for me, running in very ordinary places, running very boring runs, getting ready for this extreme experience. How do you get yourself in a place where you're like, okay, I'm going to go do this ordinary thing a bunch of times so that I get ready for this extraordinary thing?
Right. And that comes to the question of motive. I have some notes here that, my question here that I have is exercise a self-discipline or self-glorification? And the question then becomes, what is the motive? And that question, I think, is the heart of any kind of discipline that you do or you call discipline. Is it really discipline? And what are you disciplining yourself for? Or is this a self-glorification? And I tend to see, because I see lots and lots of people throughout the last 10 years of, or 11 years now, of putting on races, the ones who don't stick around the sport are the ones who tend that their motive is self-glorification. That's a very transient thing in which you're striving for something that's not really obtainable. And so you may reach a point, but then, yeah, you reached a point. And what does that all mean? You know, which is different than self-disciplining yourself for a right reason. I was thinking earlier today about 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27. And I'll read that because I think it's worthwhile. And this is kind of, it's something that's been on my mind, and I kind of deal with a lot with people, because a lot of times I run into people at my races that they are challenging for me as a race director, because they want things done their own way. And it's tending towards the person who's self-glorification. What can I get out of this? What can I, you know, they just want the accolades and the esteem. But, you know, so we're pretty familiar with 1 Corinthians 9. Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. And that whole thing, I hear when people talk about that, it's typically seen as the athlete is the example for spiritual fitness. I'd like to turn that around and use spiritual fitness as the example for the athlete. Because what is the prize that we're running to? And what are we trying to obtain? And for people who are in Christ, you should be gaining your prize not in yourself, but for the glory of God. And the question I usually ask myself is, what do we do as athletes? Should they not align what we do as Christians? So I think there's a really kind of meshing of these two things. And it's not necessarily just the athlete as the example for our spiritual fitness, but I think it's also just turned around. Our spiritual fitness is definitely, I think, the example for an athlete, or should be the example, whether or not we do it or not. It's different, but I think that's what it should be.
That's really cool. I like that, flipping it, using spiritual discipline for your physical discipline. You talked about the self-discipline versus the self-glorification. And I'm curious, with your time in the military, you know, something I've never been in the military, I don't have military experience, but something I hear from a lot of folks I know is that that's where they established a lot of their foundational habits, right? And those habits were kind of put on them. There was external discipline being put on them, but that they learned through that some self-discipline. Was that part of your experience in growing in this? And then how, in your mind, can some of those principles be applied to both the spiritual and physical discipline?
Yeah, I grew up, my dad was in the Navy. My grandfather was career in the Army. And I had cousins and a plethora of other people in my family who were in the military. And so I grew up with it. And when I joined the military, I had no intention of doing this, but it wasn't until, so I was actually working at an architecture firm when September 11th happened. I was just done interning there, and September 11th happens. And a week later I went down and joined the military, and I left a few months later. So it was definitely, I just felt called that was what I was supposed to do. So I had a pretty good foundation of discipline from my parents and from my grandfather, which is also very funny because, you know, my grandfather and my dad disciplining in the same way, but it was two military people trying to discipline who had the upper hand in the discipline. Right. So there was definitely, sometimes it was confusing because they were trying to outdo each other. But so yeah, I had a very good foundation to start with. And so when I transitioned into the military, it was just a more affirming, a reaffirming and tightening of that discipline. And I definitely think that it carried through throughout my whole life, because you learn that the discipline that you have. Now let's go just talk about discipline in itself. Most people think about discipline in a more corrective and negative way, but discipline in itself is actually positive and is for good. And it should always start with self-discipline, because how do you discipline someone else if you don't have discipline yourself? And so those times, those years in the military definitely helped me progress through that. And it's also, because it's a life and death situation when you're deployed and everyone around you is counting on you and you're counting on them, and you definitely want that person to be self-disciplined, it just motivates you more to be in line with that. You can't just do your own thing. So yeah, it definitely has carried over throughout my whole life. And something I find it's lacking in a lot of people's lives. And it's not taught as much. Not that it's not taught, but it's just not taught as well, that discipline is positive and we should discipline each other and ourselves. First ourselves.
I think that's a really good point about tying that discipline ourselves first and kind of combining that with what you're saying about self-discipline versus self-glory. Are there habits that we can set or ways that we can think about forming habits that can help us kind of draw a distinction between when am I falling into self-glory versus self-discipline? When am I doing a thing because like this makes me look good versus I'm doing this because I want to grow or improve or whatever that self-discipline basis is.
I think self-glorification, it can creep in if our foundation in Christ is misaligned. And I'll quote here from 1 Corinthians 10:31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. And our motivation in each of the things that we do every day should always be to the glory of God. And if we're loving God, we're going to love other people. And loving other people, to do that well, has to come from putting ourselves down and serving other people. Self-glorification never serves other people. It only serves ourselves. And there is a lot, I think, and I think the next line that's in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25, talks about exercising self-control. Having self-control means being mindful and knowing what you are doing and then executing on those things. So the correlation in discipline and self-control are tightly interwoven there. And so if you're thinking of doing those things and you're active and thinking, how am I controlling myself? How am I disciplining myself? And then how do I do that to glorify God and then serve others? You can really stay away from putting yourself on a pedestal or thinking, okay, how do I gain something for myself? And yeah, it's a really good mindset. I think goes right back to that question. What is the motive of why you're doing this? And if it's because I need to be the strongest dude in the gym, well, that's, how does that serve anyone? You know, I need to be the fastest guy and be first place. I don't care if I'm the first place guy or not. You know, I want to get out there and just run and I'm enjoying my time and I'm gaining things out there that are not necessarily for myself. And that's one of the kind of a neat thing in ultra running. When you're out there, you're not by yourself. You're running with other people going through the same situation, whether you're the first guy or the last guy. Everyone's kind of mixed together. And when you see someone and you're talking to them, you're encouraging the other person. You're like, oh, you're doing great. Oh, wait, you look like you need some water. Oh, you lost your bottle. You need another bottle. You need some, like you have very little with you and you want to give it up to the other person. And even people who are crewing you, they're going to see the other people and they could be your competitors, but they're going to give up stuff to them for their race. And it becomes this way of just continue to outpour your love to other people. And I think that's really steers you away from self-glorification when you're mindful of how am I glorifying God and how am I loving him? And in turn, how do I love other people?
I had somebody in the marathon that I ran where there was like 10 or 12 of us in a line going up this steep hill, and it was like a single track, and somebody was at the back of the pack, and there was like heavy woods on either side, and this guy at the back of the pack just without saying anything to the rest of us, all of a sudden jumped off of the path and jumped into the woods and just started running up the woods, and he passed us, but we all kind of looked at each other like, what was he doing? And it seems like it's speaking to that point you're getting at, because like, you know, whoever this guy was, it seems like he was missing that point of what this is. This is like, none of us were competing against each other. We were all on the same team just trying to finish this race. And this guy was like, no, I'm going to go win this thing. And we were like, if you finish, we're going to be happy for you. there's no competition here. But it seems like that's probably what we get into a whole lot. It's like, well, I'm gonna lift this much more than this other guy, or I'm only gonna get something out of this if I, you know, get this much success out of it, or something like that. So that's a helpful distinction.
Yeah, it's funny because when people ask me like, well, what's your best 100-mile race, and I'm like, I don't usually tell people like the things that I've done. People ask me and I'll tell them, but it's never like something that I just know people who, that's the first thing they say is like, oh, I ran this race and I was this fast. It's like, okay, what does that mean? What's this? Like, how's the conversation? Am I supposed to praise you because you ran that fast? It's like, no. And as being a race director, I mean, I come across lots and lots of people, and there are people who, I had one year where this person made a wrong turn, and then they got to the finish line and they were throwing volunteers under the bus. It was the volunteers' fault. And it was, you know, you did all this stuff wrong. And I was like, I don't, what are you talking about? And it turns out they were completely wrong. And they just wanted to win. They made a mistake. And then it was everyone else's fault. And because we somehow hindered them from achieving that accolade, and it wasn't good. And, you know, we got to deal with those people, and you should deal with them lovingly. And it does make it hard though, when that's their main focus is not encouraging anyone else, but yelling at you because they feel wrong because they didn't achieve something. So.
Yeah. How do you, I guess a broad question is how should Christians interact with the exercise world? I mean, there's this kind of, one of the things I've been thinking about lately is just this whole kind of sphere of exercise things. You know, you get your SoulCycle, you got your CrossFit, you got your Peloton, you got all these things. And all of which I'm sure can be done well, and I'm sure can be done poorly. But for you, as you're interacting with all kinds of people, I'm sure, showing up to these races, who have all these different goals, who have all these different objectives, many of whom I'm sure are not coming to your race with the idea of, you know, I'm going to glorify God with my performance. You don't have any Eric Littles showing up to your ultra marathons. How do you, as a race director, say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to organize this, I'm going to set this up in a way that is glorifying to God? And then when you run these races, you know, when you go out and you exercise, how do you do it in a way that you're saying, okay, I'm doing this for the glory of God and not for my own glory?
We hope you're enjoying today's show. It would mean a lot if you took a second to like, subscribe, and give us a rating wherever you're listening.
You can also go to our website at forginghonor.com. On our website, you'll find information about our Patreon, where you can join our growing community. You'll also find articles, book recommendations, and other resources to help support you in your habit-forming journey.
And now, back to the show.
Yeah, I actually never wanted to be a race director. There's a lot of things that God puts in front of me that I just didn't think I was going to do.
You just wanted a bowl. You were just, that was what you were going to do. And
I was going to be a bowler. Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to be an elder, and God was like, guess what? We're doing this. And I'm like, okay. I didn't want to be a race director. And I was very selfish at the one point. My very first race was a 24-hour race. and a local guy was putting it on, but it was done so, so poorly. And it wasn't 24 hours. It was like 4 hours or 6 hours. And I thought, this is not even, you can't get 25, you know, you can't get a marathon in here in this, in 3 hours for most people. And so selfishly, I was wanting the county to put on a race, and I pitched it to them thinking, yeah, I get to go run this race for 24 hours. You know, and they were like all on board. They're like, this is fantastic. You like nailed it. We think this would be great. Guess what? You need to be the race director. And I was like, oh man, I guess I just wanted to run. And they're like, no, you're going to be the race director or it's not going to happen. I said, all right, I guess I'm doing it. And so I did that. And then the next year I put on my first real ultra, trail ultra, which the World's End. And I took the approach after that first race of what can I do that I can give an experience to people that makes them feel, it's going to A, challenge them and get that aspect that they're looking for, but also showcasing the beauty that God has made out in nature for us. And how is the experience to which they feel loved and part of a community, and they can walk away and say, I feel much more content in life. And just by doing those things has allowed me to meet people, and they see how much love that I have for other people. And like, people don't, like, I don't shy away. I tell them, like, you know, I'm a Christian and these are the things I do, and this is how I show love to people. And I love meeting Christians that are there. They're before the race and they're praying for the, before the race. And I just love to go talk to them. And, you know, I meet all kinds of people that way. And I just try to conduct myself that if someone would just look at it and examine how we do things, they could just see that I'm exuding God's love to them and doing things in a very honoring way for them. And it's not a, you know, how can I best do this to make myself look good? I don't care about that. I want them to know that someone was there and they loved them. And why did they get loved? It's because first Christ loved me, and I get to share that with them. And so it's just given me lots of opportunities to interact with people in that level, which has just been fantastic. And I've just met so many different people all across the country, different countries that they come over here and race. And it's just, yeah, it's just fantastic.
That's really cool. This whole conversation, one of the things I do, Banjo knows this, I'm always like, draw the practical piece out. You know, Banjo wants to ask, how do we relate this to Christianity? And how is these broad questions? But trying to draw some practical things out from this conversation so far, a couple of things I'm hearing. One, answering that question, we've been dancing around this, but who is this for? What are we doing this for? So there's a very practical question we can ask ourselves. Is this for us? Is this for God? Another piece that I keep hearing is, you know, you mentioned, you know, in the military, you relied on other people to have self-discipline because it was life and death. There were other people involved. In ultramarathoning, you're alongside each other, working together to achieve this common goal. The person that does it alone, tries to do it alone, is probably going to end up failing. Or at the very least, they don't last long, as you mentioned. They stop doing it after a few years. So there's a camaraderie aspect to it. There's a practical piece there. Find a team, find a group of people that you can work with on these things. And then I think the last thing that I'm getting out of this so far is, you know, your example of almost accidentally becoming the race director, right? You saw a need and there was a role that had to be filled. So filling the empty roles, whether or not it's something you aspire to, right? So are those fair summations of our conversation so far? That's awesome. Very good. So it's kind of digging into some of these practical things. If you've laid some groundwork for yourself as a young man, you say, okay, I want to do something to the glory of God. You say, I want to find a group to do this with, or maybe there's a role I see that needs to be filled. If you were a young man, how would you start going about in your everyday life, building some of that self-discipline to work towards these goals?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do in our church life, which is important and the Bible tells us to do it, is to meet together in fellowship with other people. And if you're not doing that and you're trying to go solo, it's going to be incredibly difficult to maintain any kind of discipline because God hasn't made us to be alone. And sure, we can be at home and we can read the Bible, but unless we fellowship with our brothers and sisters, if we're not hearing the word preached to us, it's going to be incredibly difficult for us to maintain any of that stuff at home long term. And it comes to accountability also. Is how do you talk to someone and say, what have you been reading lately? What book are you reading? What book of the Bible are you reading? Can I read it with you? And can we discuss it? And that I think is one of the first steps, is finding someone who can help maintain discipline with you. It is very challenging to be disciplined only by yourself because there's so many distractions in the world that you're going to be derailed really quickly. And so that's the first thing I would say. Now, my brother is part of F3, and the Christians meet together. I've been to some of those and I think they're great guys, but they meet at times that I typically can't get to. So, but I think there are different groups and stuff that are out there that if you're looking for, you can find them. And if there isn't, then finding someone who are like-minded to join you in doing some kind of fitness or even just health related stuff. Like if you just want to be healthy, it's easier if you're hanging out with someone who's like-minded and it's not eating cake every night. I mean, I like cake. And if you gave me cake every night and my buddy gave me cake, I would eat cake every night. But finding someone who's in a capacity that says, yes, I want to do this to be more self-disciplined, to be healthier, to exercise regularly so I'm healthy and can serve others. I think that's one of the first things to do. And I think discipline looks different for other people because we all struggle with sin and we have different temptations. And so you could be disciplined in food, but not going out for your run or going to the gym. Some people, yeah, they're pretty good at just going to the gym, but then they don't work out well. They don't know how to work out. They don't have a good, you know, program. I think it's very unique to individuals how that will look. I tend to do really well just going out for my running by myself, but I also have enough people around that I talk to them about it. And, we talk through, oh, I've been doing this to better my cadence so that I'm more efficient while I'm running. And this is my mileage. And it isn't a competition. It's just the fact that we can bounce ideas off of each other and hold each other accountable. So I do think that's one of the first, and I think one of the main steps is to get into the mindset of being with someone else, to be in fellowship with them as you go through it.
It's really cool. And I think it's awesome that the first thing you went to was fellowshipping around God's word, as rather than, oh, you need to find the perfect workout group, or anything else. It was start with fellowship in Christ. And then you can kind of branch from there. Almost like there's a layering to some of these disciplines, which is something I strongly believe in. And yeah, we've mentioned F3 on the show before. I've been to a few F3 things before in my area and it's cool. I think it's awesome. But if you go to that divorced of your own, a solid group around you who is encouraging you in Christ, I think you're not going to progress in your athletic pursuits as far. You might progress physically. You might end up being the strongest guy at the gym, but to what end, as you've already asked?
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really important point.
I had someone a couple of years ago. I was in my prime of running. This is right before COVID. And he had told me, he said, look, you're a great runner. You should boast about your stuff. You should, you know, you should be on Facebook telling people how good you are. And this is what he does. And like announce where you're going to go and what things you're going to do and how great. And I was just like, yeah, we're never going to hang out because this is not how we conduct ourselves. This is you again to self-glorification. And I don't want to be that person. And I, you know, really respectful and said, you're a great runner too, but this is like, this is not me. And this is how I'm going to do. And I'm not going to be on Facebook telling people how great I am. I'm not going to sit there and tout my stats, you know, to people. It's just, it's not what God calls us to do. And it does come back down to if your foundation is in Christ and doing what he calls us to do, then I think you're going to be successful in those things. And, you know, we just talk about fitness in general, like how do we use our fitness? And I would say our fitness and health is a gift God has given us. And if we're motivated to use what God has given us, then we have to think about how do we use that gift of our fitness to serve him and serve our brothers and sisters. And yeah, it's just, I think you get that, you have to have the foundation set properly and then move forward from there.
Folks who listen to this show, and both of you guys know I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. and of course I have to bring up the quote that all great Uncle Bens must quote, and I am an Uncle Ben, which is, you know, with great power must also come great responsibility. But I've been thinking, in all seriousness, I've been thinking about that lately because, you know, we talked with our last guest a couple of weeks ago, kind of about this, you know, the gift that our body is. And I've been thinking about, you know, why do we need to take our habits so seriously? Why do we need to take our exercise so seriously? What does it mean to be a Christian man? What does it mean, you know, what is it that, that is required of us? And to pull another movie quote, there's a line from The Godfather, where Don Corleone, says to, Johnny Fontaine, he says, he says, women and children can be careless, but not a man. A man cannot be careless. We could debate over that, but I think there's this responsibility that comes with masculinity. There's this responsibility that comes with being a man that, and really just with a person that if you're going to have these things, if you're going to have these gifts, you have to be responsible with them. You have to, we could say take advantage of them or just use them to their fullest. But if we're going to exercise, we have to do it in a way that honors God. We have to recognize that every action that we do, you know, like you were saying from Corinthians, every action, the way we eat, the way we drink, we have to do it responsibly. And that's not a limit. That's not a hindrance on our daily life. It's actually the way that we're meant. It's the way that we're designed to live, which I just think is important and something that I'm getting from what you're saying. In that line of kind of being responsible, if a young man is listening to our episode today and is either interested in maybe getting into ultra running, which first off, dear listener, brave soul, go for it, but go with God. If they're getting into that, you know, where should they start? Obviously they probably shouldn't, you know, go off and run an 80 mile, marathon, to begin, but what can they do to really, to begin on that journey? Or if someone is like, you know what, ultra marathon, not going to be my thing, but I want to start getting in shape. Do you have any recommendations for how people can kind of just begin that journey?
Just to cut in here, I want to point out Banjo is asking a practical question and I'm really happy.
Well, first I put in two movie quotes. So, you know, you get something in, you get something out.
Yeah, it's true. He made up for it.
You know, we can go back to 1 Corinthians, you know, do not run aimlessly. Do not box as one beating the air. We have to be intentional in the things that we do. And being intentional means, besides our responsibilities, if you want to get into, say, running, you have to be intentional. And so whatever area you're in at, there's always races nearby within easy driving distance. And I think if you want to be a trail runner, you just look online. There's a lot of trail races are on ultrasignup.com or runsignup.com. And you just sign up. It's one of the things I think we tend, and you'll learn this too then also in ultra running or trail running in general, is losing the fear of making mistakes. You have to trust that God has given you your faculties to make choices. And if you're relying on him, that you will make the right choices. If you make the wrong choices, you're going to learn from those choices. But we're so hesitant to make a choice. And so I think one of the, I signed up for that 80 mile race. I just did it. And guess what? I was locked in. And I, as soon as I was locked in, I decided, well, now I have to run it. And I think that's one of the things to do is just find a race. If it's a 10K, if it's a half marathon, you just sign up for it. You go out there, you fail. That's okay. No one's judging you because you failed. You've taken that step and you've learned something. And I think that's going back to your part about being responsible. The responsibility on men to learn to take action and to learn from those actions. If you're forever just sitting around waiting, then you're doing it wrong. You're never learning. You're not being responsible. You're just kind of hanging out, and you shouldn't just be hanging out in life. Proverbs 14:23, in all toil there is profit, but mere talk tend only to poverty. Like, it's calling us to do something. Even you can go to Ecclesiastes and talk about toil being vanity, but it also talks about in Christ, in God, that toil is for his good. So yeah, it's just going out and taking that leap of faith just to do it and being okay at failing. That's okay, because that will make you a better man. You will learn from it. Take something away from that. And then go back out and do it again and learn from that. And just by doing that, you're going to meet people. You're going to have experiences with people. You'll soon figure out, oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of people nearby that I didn't even know. So that actually, that just brings up the, I forgot about this. My old pastor, before I started going to the church I am at now, I was looking for a church, and he was an ultra runner and lived in the same town, and I never met him. And we never crossed paths. We were at a couple races. Well, eventually God brought us together at the finish line of a race, and we just started talking and we started hanging out and running and started going to his church. And God just led me through all that without me even having to try. I didn't have to try. God will lead you. And I took stuff away from it just by going out there and meeting people and doing what God says. Just do it. I will lead you. And being content with that without having to be in control, if just taking that step of faith.
That's an awesome point. Two things. One, that Proverbs quote about too much talk leading to not much profit should probably just be above the doorway of every podcaster who has ever lived, ourselves included. but the other thing that I think that should be just make it just a fantastic point there about just go out and do it. And that like what we should do as men is just like go out and do stuff, because I think there's so much fear that gets built into like the manosphere culture of, am I being a man or not? Like, am I doing enough? Am I being enough as a man or not? And that creates such a culture of fear and hesitancy, and I'm not going to go do this thing, and I'm not going to try that thing, or I don't want to fail, because if I fail, then I'm not a man, or I'm not as manly as the guy next to me. And I think that's just such a phenomenal point that, like, go out and do it. God is enough. He's in control. There's nothing that you can fail so poorly at that God hasn't ordained or is, you know, is ready to carry you through. So just go out and do it. Because, you know, that's what you're called to do, is that call to action. So yeah, drop the fear, be, I think Psalm 27, be strong and take heart and take courage. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and wait for the Lord.
Yeah.
JJ, I know we got to start wrapping up. Do you have any last questions? I got one last one that's going to be a left fielder.
Okay.
Cause I like going left field, but
I have a few final questions. Two related to your own personal fitness, and then one that's my always final question. First, what does your actual daily exercise routine look like for you as an ultramarathoner?
I don't have a daily. because I have my own business and it's very flexible in the schedule, and got three kids that are in all kinds of things, from Girls on the Run to band to art club, drama club, all kinds of stuff. So I don't necessarily have a daily routine, but I do have basically weekly goals that I set for myself based on what I'm striving to get to. So I tend to make goals. I look ahead and say, I'm going to sign up for this race, and I make, you know, that's my race that I'm going to work towards. And I find that to be pretty good motivation, because it helps because other people I know are doing the race. And so we talk about it. It goes back to that fellowship of knowing other people doing the same types of things, knowing what they're doing and how they're progressing, and they're interested in how I'm doing. And so it makes me make sure that I want to actually be doing it and be accountable, you know, not to just myself, but to other people also. So I tend to, for my own, and different people also need different things. I can run a 100 mile race doing 35 miles a week. Other people, they need 45 miles a week or 50 miles a week. And I'm very selective over time. I've figured out how to get the most benefit out of 35 miles a week. And I also lift, I have my own gym in my house, so I get to lift at home. And so I kind of work in that kind of that sphere. It kind of bounces, but I have a general idea of what I'm doing each week. I look at the start of the week and I kind of plan out that week.
I like that idea, the weekly goals. That's an idea that was introduced to me not too long ago, but I was always trying to set these daily, and, you know, as soon as I missed a day, oh, it's over.
Yeah. It becomes very rigid.
Right.
And it's kind of like reading. I want to read X amount this week, and how my schedule works out will determine how I get it fit in for that week. Yeah. If I was 21 and single, it'd be a lot easier just to kind of schedule my own, but I'm accountable not only to myself, but to my family, to the church, to my business. And so there's just a lot of moving pieces that I have to juggle.
Right. The other question I had related to some of your personal fitness, you sort of already answered this. But you know, you've really focused on ultramarathoning, but you also have a home gym. There's a lifting side to it. And I imagine, you know, in the military, you did do the rucking, but there's probably a lot of calisthenics involved as well. How large of a role does that play for you on top of that 35 miles?
I try to get about 3 days a week of lifting in some capacity. I think lifting is great. Running solely for running, you can do it. I did it for a couple of years. I think lifting is also very beneficial because it translates to a lot of things in your life. If you start having kids and you have to hold your kids for endless hours of the day, guess what? If you're lifting stuff up, doing a one-handed lift with a kid in your hand and picking up baskets of clothing or whatever. There's all kinds of things you can apply lifting. Like I said earlier, we're just in a society that's very, very comfort driven. We got to be really not push ourselves. And reality is we should be. And because we don't have manual labor that we do often enough, we have to go and kind of substitute that. And I think lifting is just an excellent way to do it. And I think lifting's fun.
That's awesome. General.
Yeah.
All right. Banjo, your left field question.
Okay. So I have one right field question, which I'm assuming is the metaphor for a very normal question. And then I have a left field question. So my right field question is, I got baseball on the brain. Where can folks go if they want to learn more about, you know, races that you're hosting, if they want to, you know, participate in any races that you're in, if they want to learn more about you and what you do, where can folks go, to learn more about that? That's my right field question. I'll hold my left field question till the answer.
Sure. So I have right now, I'm down to 3 races just because there's a lot going on in my life and got to keep it. So I'm open for the things that the Lord has me doing elsewhere. But I have, if you go to worldsendultra.com, that's the one race we do. That's in June. It's our most popular. It sells out in 3 minutes. And then our wait list is super long. It's about twice as long as as many people that are in the race. So the Lord has blessed me with that. That was actually my first big race and it just took off. We have another one, the one you're doing, which is the World's End Fall Classic. That's in the fall. That's the half marathon.
Very excited.
It's super great. It is definitely, if you want to dip your toe in, you'll get clobbered. It's really technical, but it's so scenic. There's so much like God has put in the World's End area, the World's End State Park, that it's just magnificent. The waterfalls, the rocks, the just everything.
Am I going to be climbing up waterfalls or do I not want to know?
Ignorance is bliss.
Okay, good to know.
And then we have one that's a little more diabolical. It's the Black Forest Ultra up in the Black Forest Trail in Pennsylvania, which starts at midnight. It runs through the night into the day. You have 19 hours.
When is that race?
That one's the week after the World's End Fall Classic.
Okay, good. That's going to eliminate that one for me. That's going to be nice and healthy. Good.
Yeah, that one's pretty rough. But people, they find like, yeah, I need to do something even harder than what I've been doing because I just need to continue to challenge myself. And yeah, and people just love coming to my races because they know that I love the sport for the love of serving others, and people know that, and that's why they come. And yeah, I'm just blessed that I can serve other people in this capacity.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't recommend highly enough heading out to one of Dave's races. And if you're in the area or if you're traveling for a race, can't highly enough recommend those races. Okay, my left field question. Okay. I'm a movie guy. Folks know JJ, by the way, I just want the listeners to know JJ just rolled his eyes so hard. I think that they rolled into the back of his skull. Okay.
I can attest to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't quite that bad. Yes.
Well, he covered his eyes with his hand, so you couldn't see it.
You couldn't tell. It was pretty bad. So it's always going to come back to movies for me. But so I have this tradition. I think I've told you this before, but I have this tradition where anytime I'm going to run a race, the night before I watch a movie. JJ knows this. He has. We've shared hotel rooms together where I have, he's like, I'm going to bed.
I'm trying
to
sleep. I'm in bed and he's turning on a movie. And
I've got
a
movie.
We have a race in 8 hours. Let me sleep. Like,
yeah, but I got to watch my movie. I've got to watch my movie. So, my one rule for these movies is that it can't be a sports movie. Because one time I watched Rocky before a race and I was so pumped up that I like shot out of the gate and I had like 100-meter lead on everybody. And then just like,
is that the race I'm thinking of, Banjo?
Different one. Okay, different one. Okay. Yeah, yeah,
so this has happened more than once though.
Yeah.
So not just sports movies.
It's a bad habit that I have. But I've noticed that movies, sports movies trigger it. So my question is, if you're about to run an ultra marathon and you're like, I'm going to watch a movie before this race, what movie would you watch, or what movie would you recommend maybe to somebody who's about to undergo such an endeavor?
I would recommend Band of Brothers, probably halfway through Band of Brothers.
Excellent. So the whole miniseries, like the first five episodes?
One of the things I love about Band of Brothers is you get the examples of those in charge who have no discipline and who are fearful and aren't serving others other than themselves. And as you progress through the movies, you can see very great examples of how those who are serving and are self-disciplined and all those aspects that have to come together to survive. And I think it's just a great series in general, but it would definitely just jump in there. It's somewhere in the middle where they're on deployment. Yeah.
That's awesome. A good one. That first episode of that show, that's one of my favorite hours of TV ever. I think that's just a great thing.
Yeah, it's great.
Banjo. Well, Dave,
you weren't expecting that, were you?
No, I wasn't. That was a great answer. I was in a different camp. So that was fantastic.
As much grief as I give you for your movies and for the love of movies, that's actually a really good question, Banjo. And I really like that. I just want to say that.
Yeah,
so the very last final question that we always ask every guest.
Wait, I'm not done yet.
Oh, there's more. Give it to us.
Okay, here we go.
I want to touch on something that we didn't get to. And I think really, really important that we at least briefly touch on it. In the larger catechism that we use in question 105 about... back up here.
Can I get a snap for the Westminster Larger Catechism? Let's just applause.
Thank you. So what is the sins forbiddeth in the first commandment? And I think it is very worthwhile to think about about halfway through self-love, self-seeking, and all other inordinate and immoderate setting of our mind, will, or affections upon other things and taking them off from him in whole or in part. And I think that one of the things that we fall victim of is idolatry and making our fitness and our health as an idol that I think is key, because we talk about a lot of the good benefits of fitness and learning about self-discipline and all those things to steer away from. But I think one of a big thing to steer away from is making fitness an idol in our lives, because it takes us away from the foundation of using God's gift that he's given us for the fellowship and the love of others, because we've then set it as the object of our affection and we seek only doing our fitness for, again, that'll bring us all the way back to self-glorification. I just wanted to point that out. My mind will be good if other people hear that. Don't make it an idol. I know plenty of people in the running community that make it an idol. And the thing is, I always say, when someone has made their sport an idol and they get injured and it goes away, they have taken who they are and put that into that thing. So if running is who I am, and you take running away from me, well, then who am I? What do I have to live for? What am I supposed to do? But if you're not seeking that as your idol, I could get injured and not run again, and I'd be perfectly fine, because God's the center of my universe, and it doesn't matter if I have running or not running. I can't lift, doesn't matter. My health goes down the toilet, it's okay. Because I still haven't lost the love of Christ. And I think it's worthwhile to think about and meditate on and pray about as we go through that journey of fitness, that we don't lose sight of that, because it becomes very, very hard and difficult once it sets in as an idol. You make yourself that thing and it becomes really dangerous.
That's a great point. And I'm really glad you brought that up. I had that exact experience in college. I had a great sophomore season. I think it was my sophomore season. And just kind of going into when races started, I had like this crazy injury where like my whole leg was going numb while I was running these things. JJ remembers this. And I was like going to get MRIs and all this stuff, and the doctors couldn't tell me anything. But I remember trying to go for a run at one point out in the woods, and just like the leg went numb, and I was in all this, you know, all this pain. And I like just pulled off the other side of the trail and was just like crying, because I was like, if I'm not running, like who am I? Like what am I gonna be if I'm not a runner? And I remember having this experience kind of like over the next week of kind of God just walking me through like, hey, you're a Christian first, you're a Christian runner, and the Christian part comes first. Maybe it should be a runner Christian, because Christian is the key part and runner is the adjective.
Grammar schmammer.
Grammar teacher. But I've been using Valley of Vision kind of in my morning devotions. And one of the things that is kind of a repeated prayer through the Valley of Vision is, don't let me be taken captive by the delusions of this world. And one of those delusions that they talk about in Valley of Vision that we pray about is that, you know, loving myself more than I love God or more than I love others. And it's such an easy delusion to fall into that I am the center of my life. I was just listening to somebody talking to me about evolution. Like evolutionarily, we're designed to stay alive and to keep ourselves alive. And as you're saying that, it's like, well, no, that's not actually my design. That's not actually what I'm created for. I'm not actually created to keep myself alive. I'm actually created to worship a God who made me. That's actually my function. And all of those things point towards that. And anything other than that is a delusion. So yeah, I just think that's a great point. So thank you for bringing that up.
We're in Christ, and that means my identity is in Christ, and I can't lose Christ. So I should be content in all things that I do. I find it very sad when I see other people who struggled with this because they have made that their identity. Mm. And yeah, it hurts me. It hurts me to see that.
That's, I love that point. And it's something we've talked about a lot here, actually. There's always ditches on either side, right? In our pursuits. And, you know, this ditch of making whatever our pursuit is an idol. Now I have so many more questions than I had before, because I see, you know, what's the other ditch here? You know, and I think something that Banjo and I have talked about a little bit is we can take the opposite side of fitness a little too far and make it almost, I don't know if it's idol is the right term, but almost like, well, I'm in Christ, so I don't need to care about my body at all, right? That might be the opposite ditch. And I've seen that. I've talked to people that they seem to actually think that. I don't know if they really do, but they seem to actually think that. And the way they talk, it sounds that way. Do you have an encouragement for those that they think, well, I don't have time to exercise because, you know, if it's all about Christ, then I should be going away from the things of this world, and exercising is one of the things of this world. I don't know. I've experienced people like that before.
Proverbs 13:4, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied.
There you have it.
Short. So be diligent in the things that we're doing. If you're just not doing anything, you're not diligent. So just by definition.
And that gets back to what you said kind of at the top of the hour, which was in all that you do in word, deed, do everything unto the glory of God. Like that diligence, if we really believe that we're created for this glorious purpose of worshiping the Almighty God, then we can run in a way, we can lift in a way, we can do jumping jacks in a way that is glorifying God. But we have to be diligent with it. We have to be responsible with it. We can't take that for granted. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's really awesome. I love that.
All right, you got one more question.
Yes, my final question.
Final question.
It's always as practical as it gets. We've touched on it a little bit, but say tomorrow, young man hasn't exercised much in his life before. He wants to start figuring something out. He wants to start exercising. What is the one thing you would tell him?
Ooh, what's one thing I would tell him?
JJ with the stumpers.
I mean, you have to do a self-assessment. Where are you? You don't know where you're going to go unless you know where you're at. And typically, I don't know too many people who start off on something and know where they're at to start. Self-assessment.
I love that. That's really good. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Dave. This has been awesome. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Thanks so much, Dave.
Yeah, a pleasure to be here.
This has been the Forging Honor Podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure to like, subscribe, and give us a rating to bring others into the Forging Honor journey. On our website, you'll find information about our Patreon, articles, as well as links to the many resources we mention in the show.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of Forging Honor. We'll see you next time.